Maharaj will be speaking on the topic is not actually defined. So, yeah, we'll just say what he wants to say, I guess. And afterwards, we'll also have a question and answer session. And for those who are not brave enough to ask, we have a clipboard running around. So I hope you enjoy the program. Thank you.
That clipboards are anyway good because, you know, they give you some time to peacefully recollect your thoughts and verse. When you're put on the spot, can be tough to just ask a question. Blank. All right. I just thought about what I was going to speak about 10 seconds ago. I thought to speak about kalpataru's. Kalpataru's are wish-fulfilling desire trees. So it is said that devotees are wish-fulfilling desire trees. Because devotees have dedicated their life to the service of Krishna, who is the most beautiful. It is said that when Krishna is decorated with jewels, that the jewels become more beautiful. Usually it's the other way around, you know what I mean? It's kind of, it's old and sort of loose hanging skin, but put some gold, put some jewels, and it looks like something. That is the material world. But Krishna beautifies everything else. And the beauty of Krishna is not only external or skin deep. The beauty of Krishna is truly his entire being, internally, externally. Therefore, he is the embodiment or the personification of all beauty. He is also the manifestation of all strength. Again, internally, externally. Who's not in need of strength? We are always confronted with our limitations. That's the nature of life. Everyone, no matter who it is, confronted with limitations. But Krishna is not limited. That's why he's the source of all strength. Krishna is the source. He is all knowledge also. All knowledge is within him, all fame, all renunciation. Beauty, wealth, fame, renunciation. Huh? No, knowledge I had already. What? Power, didn't have strength. Huh? Fame, I didn't have fame yet? No? Fame he has. That's one of the six. It's always like that, a row of six, here we go. Aishwaryasya samagrasya viryasyasasa kriya jnana vairagyushchaiva sanambhagamitingana in Sanskrit. So he has these qualities, and the devotee of Krishna becomes, by being dedicated to Krishna, becomes empowered. One who turns away from Krishna becomes disempowered. And that's what we see in the world. We're seeing a world of disempowered living beings. All of us are disempowered everywhere. When one becomes, again, a devotee, a saintly person, one who is dedicated to the Supreme, then such a person becomes saintly. You see that, like, every tradition of the world has some saints. You find them in the Catholic Church. They burn candles for the saints, and Muslims have their pir, they call them pir, some saints. And in India, they have santas, not to mistake for Santa Claus. So, but even he is a little saintly. So, like that, saints. Saints exist in all culture of the world, and saints are interesting because they are, well, a kind of superhuman. They're more than ordinary. They are, and they have an inconceivable inner strength and an inner depth and an inner spirit of peacefulness and happiness. And these are all kind of qualities that are ascribed to saints. Saints are selfless. Saints are ready to work for the good of all others, isn't it? I'm trying to sort of sketch the saint, you know, from dictionaries and encyclopedias. There are such things as dictionaries of saints, right? Just as you have dictionaries of crossword puzzles or Sudoku puzzles, you also have dictionaries of saints. In short, it's a mainstream topic, the saint. The saint in this world is the exception, is the inconceivable. I mean, how in the world can anyone be a saint like Francis of Assisi, for example? It's just shocking. He was embracing lepers. I mean, you know, thanks a lot. See you later. Sorry, got to go now. It's like, so an amazing person. It is said that Francis of Assisi, if anyone desired anything he had, he would give it. Take it. Whatever it was, take it. Like we are like guarding our assets carefully. So just see some qualities of saints. So these are extraordinary personalities who are, it's practically impossible to follow their example. But exactly that is actually the normal state. That's a normal human being, and anyone else is a reduced human being. That's basically what the Vedic understanding is. One becomes reduced when one becomes entangled in matter. As we become attached to matter and desire to possess it, desire to squeeze enjoyment out of it, desire to protect it, desire to gain more. As we do so, gradually our capacity shrinks, our consciousness shrinks, our whole being begins to center around a very small world. And our capacity to perceive of the greater reality decreases and disappears. And our capacity for greater and deeper feelings or more broad-minded type of thinking also diminishes and disappears. And thus, what is the common denominator or the ordinary standard of life is actually substandard for a human being. So, saintly persons are like desire trees, wish-fulfilling desire trees. The saintly persons, they can give us blessings. Blessings are very important, because a saintly person has credits with the Supreme Lord, because he has made so much sacrifice. Therefore, if the saintly person is praying or requesting that auspiciousness will come upon others, then it must come. Then it must come. The Lord upholds the words of the saintly person. If the saintly person simply says, "Oh, yes, let it be," then tatastu, so be it. So these saintly persons are called kalpatarus, wish-fulfilling desire trees. And that is a secret. It is a great secret. It is said if one simply, in approaching a saintly person, one can think, okay, you can give me blessings. So, give. Give. It's like, that's not the way to, you might get something at gunpoint, but not everything. Something remains hidden. If one wants to really get the full blessings of a saintly person, then one must almost capture the heart of that saintly person by an attitude of humility. Therefore, the key to connect with such saintly persons is humility. Now, I remember humility in the world kind of looks odd. I remember a TV program of a man who was he was going for a job interview, and the interviewer was sitting behind a screen. You couldn't see him, and only a cold voice would come out of the wall. Name? So, thank you very much, please. Name? Thank you very much, please. So this man kept on saying, thank you very much, please. Thank you very much, please. And it seemed like some sort of out of place, some sort of almost foolish, clown-like attitude. So I used to read comic books, and in the comic books there sometimes Chinese people would be there, and they would say, this lowly fallen worm, right? Introduce themselves as a lowly insignificant worm or something like that. Like, how can any human being, like, with some self-esteem, introduce himself like an insignificant worm? Isn't that a bit like over the top? Man, I thought. Now, Jai Keshavi said that I had already introduced myself, but I'll introduce myself again. I'm a low, insignificant worm. What can I say? I'm not Chinese, but worm nonetheless. Why? Because what power do I have? Humility is a quality that is related to honesty. If we are really honest about ourselves, then we are not the greatest person on earth. We are not the most intelligent. We are not the most learned. We are not the best musicians. We are not the best of anything, if we're really honest about it. So honesty automatically leads to humility. And humility is the attitude that one requires to approach saintly persons. If one approaches a saintly person in a mood of humility, in a mood of service, then one can receive blessings. Such blessings are of very great power and can transform us and uplift us. People may not know, people may not value these things so much these days. But that's a fact, what can be said. And that is actually a secret, maybe a forgotten secret. And, I told you at the beginning, I traveled, I made a journey to the east, and a long one, and an involved one. And if you ask, what did you find? What did you learn? What did you find on your journey? I would say that I came to the holy river Ganges. I had read the book of Hermann Hesse, Siddhartha, who sat down at the stream and listened. I sat down at the Ganga and I listened. What did I learn? Many things. First, timelessness. Timelessness. When you sit there on the banks of the mighty river Ganga and that endless mass of water is just flowing and flowing and so much power and energy and there's no end to it, it's natural to see the flow of time and to see it continuing, and it's timeless, just a timeless experience, and get a feeling of timelessness. That was there. But it didn't stop there. I realized that behind all that is something greater. Behind timelessness. Timelessness is good. It is the absence of something that's a problem. Time. Time is a problem. So the absence of it is good. But it doesn't say much about the positive experience. But the positive experience is the business of saintly persons who are full-time, busy, busy with kirtan, with glorification of the amazing opulences, the amazing qualities, the amazing nature of the Supreme, and who dedicated themselves to that. So that's the deeper meaning of kirtan. That's why I said, like a bird early in the morning when the sun rises, sings, not just because he likes music, but because he is just glorifying the amazing appearance of the sun, the light, the heat after the cold night, which as a bird you experience a little more than we do with our electric blanket. So in this way, the saintly person is seeing a glorious reality that we don't see, but by the blessings of the saintly person, we can also see. So, this I learned on my journey east. And, as I said, I'm not a great man, but I'm trying to follow great personalities. And that is bringing greatness into my life, although I cannot claim that I have such great qualities. But whatever greatness comes in my life comes from great personalities. Logical. There was a time in my life that I was responsible for big projects. And at that time, I spent all my time in meetings, And these meetings, they were intense sometimes. And there's a lot of politics that meetings tend to do that. People have vested interests. And at one point, I distinctly felt I have to get out of here, because if I stay in this atmosphere, I'll also become like that. Yeah. If I'm dealing with people, even if you don't like it, you know, but if you have to deal with a politician, yeah, you have to become a politician. Even if you don't want to be a politician forces you to be one step ahead. You know, he's making so much manipulation. You have to be a step ahead. Cover yourself, all sorts. Become a politician. So in the same way, by simply being with saintly persons, serving saintly persons, one becomes a saintly person. Then all one's desires are fulfilled. So that is the meaning of the word kalpataru, wish-fulfilling desire tree. It's a meditation. I like it. I hope you also do. Here's your questions.
It's dark like anything. You can't see in the dark.
Some enlightenment is suitable for the occasion. That sounds less romantic but more effective. Many times people say ancient knowledge does not work in a modern world lifestyle. Please explain, elaborate how to apply ancient spiritual knowledge to a modern city life. Okay. Well, I spoke about timelessness. So there's two types of knowledge. There is knowledge that is very time-bound. Like, you know, to know how to use a phone. Right? It's like, you know, and next year there's a new phone, it's totally different, and so on. So all your knowledge is outdated. So there's a lot of temporary knowledge that we are dealing with. But whatever may be, externals change, right? The external circumstances change. But our intrinsic nature doesn't change. Human beings are human beings, right? Caesar and Cleopatra, you know, Romeo and Juliet, right, had typical human traits. Although they are somewhere from antiquity, they are not exactly alien to us. And we can fully understand them, because human nature is human nature. That doesn't change. That is timeless. That goes on and on. The same needs are there. Although in a modern urban environment we are we have different solutions sometimes, but the human requirement is the same. Therefore this knowledge, this ancient knowledge, is not dealing with the physical arrangements, but is dealing with the intrinsic nature that is timeless, that is within us. And it responds to that, and it offers us a path of self-discipline and of a process of elevation, which has to do with our very self and nothing to do with the urban environment where we are now. Therefore, it's applicable to all time, place, and circumstance. And doesn't matter. The externals, that can be adjusted a little bit, you know. Obviously, we have a spiritual culture. Well, let's say we have a spiritual philosophy, a spiritual outlook, and then behind it, you need a way of life also. Yeah. For example, at one point I understood that alcohol was not really going to help me. Yeah. I came to that point where I tried it, believe me. I tried it and it didn't help me. And as I was with people who had spent half their life drinking huge quantities and their faces had become puffy and their hands had become also puffed up and, you know, noses somewhat swollen, eyes bloodshot and kind of watery and so on, and dull brains, right? And I thoroughly understood this is not going to help me. So I decided to turn away from that. Yeah, I turned away from that. So that is an external arrangement to turn away from that. So now that I have chosen for that, right, I've also chosen then to not live right on top of a bar. Right? I could, you know, go downtown and live right on top of a bar, but for a non-drinker it's not ideal, obviously. Yeah. So, therefore, a conviction, every conviction also requires a culture behind it. To support the conviction, to protect the conviction, just as you decide, like the example of drinking. If you've realized this is rubbish, then you stay away from it, obviously. I mean, you're not going to live in the middle of it. Right? So like that, according to one's conviction, one makes some external arrangements. So modern city life is not always ideal. Right? Because modern city life is forcing us to be on edge, right? Maybe more than we should be. Maybe more than is good for us. And so at one point you might even question, do I really want this modern city life? Is this really is this really the way I want to live? It doesn't have to be. You make less money in the country, but life is much cheaper also. So in that way, it also works. Modern city life is a complexity for anyone. It doesn't matter what your philosophy is. City life is always a complexity because it's artificial. I was also living in the city. I used to step out of my door onto the sidewalk, and then right there, like 3 feet from my nose, big buses would just flash by, and you stand there completely peaceful. Well, as if it's nothing. You know, this like huge, you know, I don't know how many tons of steel is flying by, right? And you just stand at like this close, and you stand there completely peaceful, unaffected. But it creates something artificial. So modern city life is not at all ideal. So in modern city life, we have a exalted philosophy, but not always a supportive culture. At least try to create a little island in the city where you get a supportive culture. But it begins with inner conviction, then the supportive culture. And where you can't get it, you have to tolerate it. You know, it's like that. It's a crazy world. Reading in this room.
How can we prevent ourselves from maintaining the mentality of controlling, enjoying, and something matter? And can't read it. Obeying?
Someone said it.
How can we prevent ourselves from maintaining the mentality of controlling, enjoying, and something matter?
By doing it for a spiritual purpose, you see, we cannot just turn away from matter. Yeah? I'll have nothing to do with matter anymore. How long can we last like that? It's not possible. Right? So get involved with matter, but connect it. Connect it with a spiritual purpose, and then it will uplift us, because the end of all our activity is uplifting. If we use money for Krishna, we may just get money, and think always about money, and then give to Krishna. Yeah. And make more money, give to Krishna. Or get many possessions, and this way we can try to control the material and energy, and without sinking down into greed or into lust or into frustration, which is the next stage, anger. It's sometimes said that anger is the younger brother of lust, because of frustration. We get frustrated. We tried everything and still not happy. Tried so much, and still it didn't work, and then some idiot, you know, gets in front of my feet, you know. So anger, the younger brother of lust. So that's all the result of trying to control, enjoy, and ... matter. Yeah. It's really good. GNI, and then three letters, or two. O King, O Being, obeying matter, obeying. Don't get it.
When we endeavor to become saintly, we sometimes become proud of our insignificant attempts at being saintly. How can we prevent feeling pride? It's very difficult. That's a tough one. It's very strong. The only thing is, this pride will come again and again, even when we are on a spiritual path and so on. Pride kicks in. The only problem is that we're not alone, right? Especially when we go on the spiritual path, then there may be, when we become proud on the spiritual path, then a divine hand may just intervene and pull the carpet from under us. And before you know it, right, your whole world collapses, and suddenly your pride is smashed. That's what will happen. Because our attempts towards saintliness attract mercy. But then our pride will make it impossible to receive that mercy in a gentle form. Then that mercy comes in the form of a slap or a carpet that is pulled out, or in some form of a shock that will bring us back to reality, because pride is a blown up a conception of ourselves. Carl Jung calls it a swollen ego. I kind of like that, you know, a swollen ego. So it's like a symptom of a disease. See some. Or we also say big-headed, yeah, like that. So these are ways to. So we can try on our own accord to check pride by not taking credit. Yeah. See, if you take credit for everything you do, then you feed pride. But if you don't take credit, so if we always say, like, I actually, it wasn't me who did it, it was really, actually, it was him, right? He really did it, or it was really, everyone worked together and did it, and, you know, like that. If we give the credit to others and don't claim credit for ourselves, then we can overcome pride. Yeah, that will safeguard us for false pride. And then there's good pride, right? I'm proud to belong to this movement, like because it's a very nice movement. Prabhupada, our founder, is such a wonderful person. So I'm proud of that. Yeah, that's a kind of healthy pride. But you know, proud to be South African, I don't know about that one. With all due respect, you know. Really, I like South Africa, it's not that, you know. But still, you know. It's as much a mess as everywhere else in this world. Sorry to say. Okay, that was it, huh? Anyone else? Question? Otherwise it's 8 o'clock, 2 hours have gone by, sort of getting there towards dinner time, I guess. There is a restaurant downstairs waiting for your arrival. I was thinking, gosh, where are they? How can I keep it warm all this time? Must be a struggle. It was a long kirtan. Maybe it was, some felt it was too long. Some might have felt it was too short. What to do? You can't win with these things. So I went in the middle somewhere. But I hope it was all right. A kirtan is not just, you know, sometimes to say, can you give like a 10-minute mantra meditation? No, I can't. You know, it's like, I mean, the plane hasn't even come to cruising altitude in 10 minutes. You know, it takes time to go up. It takes time for the consciousness to kind of get off the mental platform. You know what I'm saying? Where the kirtan begins to carry us. I hope that happened to some of you. Like in the beginning, you're sort of doing the tune, but at one point, the tune takes over and starts to sort of just carry us, right? And then it goes somewhere else. So I think we were definitely going there. But we have landed again. And on the ground, we've had our little talk about saintly persons, wish-fulfilling desire trees. We had your questions. Time for dinner, that's all. That's what I think. So, unless someone has a last point they want to bring up, otherwise, yes. It's very rare that someone is born saintly, but it can happen, you know, that some personalities, they are always saintly. But for most people, we can develop it. We can develop it in this life by making changes. And, you know, like they sometimes say that every saint has a past and every sinner has a future. You've heard of that one? Anyway, that's every saint has a past and every sinner has a future. So that indicates that, yes, you can become, we can all become. And oftentimes, if you've gone, if you've been low, right? If you've really been like in misery for a while, that can turn you around, and you just say, "Okay, I had enough." So that's why sometimes they say every saint has a past, every sinner has a future. So yes, we can become saintly. Why not? And it's a good thing. It's not like, if you think about it, it makes complete sense. Because we live in a world, especially now that we're living in the modern city life. In nature, well, you know, you have to deal with many of the basic, to fulfill the basic needs. Right? And it's if you don't have all this technology, it's hard work, you know, to get your food, to get this and that, your shelter. So, but in the city, it's different, you know, we got all this variety of enjoyment that's waiting for us, all these opportunities. And, you know what I mean? It's sort of... So it's not so easy to be saintly in the city. But that's what we need. You can see the need for it. A lot of people are rotting in the city, so we need some city saints. And why not? Saints of the Cape, you know. We can all be calm, and then later you get like one book, all the pictures of everybody here, Saints of the Cape. That'd be nice. That'd be fun. Okay, I hope you'll have a nice meal. And hope to see you again sometime in the future. I'm sort of knocking off early tonight because it's a busy day tomorrow. So see you later. Thanks a lot. Hare Krishna.